Hello, everyone. I'm Zach.
And I'm also Zach.
And welcome back to another episode of the Z2 podcast. And we got a lot to talk about this week. Lots of DC news, not too much Marvel news, like maybe one thing I'll bring up later. It's mostly going to be a discussion about the Batman v Superman movie. We saw that opening night. And then we watched the Rebirth stream yesterday. If you want to timestamp this, we're recording it on the day after the Rebirth announcement, so lots to talk about there.
Sunday, March 27th.
There we go. That's when we're recording this. So, Batman v Superman, what'd you think of it? I really liked it. I like where they're going with it. We'll try to keep this spoiler-free to a degree.
Yeah, I really liked it. I appreciate... Again, I consider myself a very big DC and Batman fanboy, but I very much see it kind of as its own separate universe. I've seen a lot on Facebook and Twitter, people just kind of running on it, just like, I hated that movie. It was awful.
What's weird is a lot of the comic book people that we've been following, like in our comic book group, there's been a lot of positivity behind it. It seems like, I mean, especially like there was a, I can't remember if it was Zack Snyder or Ben Affleck, but they both said it was, one of them said that it's definitely a movie for the fans, and after seeing it, I agree with them.
Oh, yeah, you definitely see it. It doesn't deserve the 37% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was definitely one of those movies, if you love, if you like the general Frank Miller universe, you're going to like this movie. It's entertaining in that fact and in that regard.
It does have its issues. The pacing is a bit messy. That was probably the biggest flaw with the movie, and the writing could have been better. But in terms of like acting wise, I thought Ben Affleck killed it. I thought he was fantastic as Batman. Even with he does kill people, but again, if you take it out of its kind of put it in its own universe, it's okay. Like, apparently the Batman solo movie is supposed to explain why he's so bitter at the world and wants to act and does actually shoot people.
Yeah, the theory I've taken away from it is that, you know, he has very much given up on, you know, just scaring criminals. He straight up, like, he branded people, you can see that in the trailer. And the leading theory behind this super violent Batman is after the death of his Robin, which
I still think it's Jason.
Exactly. It's probably Jason Todd or something along the lines. But after the death of his Robin, he's just gone to this very dark, dark place. That he's more on the mission than he is as what we were known him as a comic book character. And you definitely see that in the movie. The moment he has a gun in his hand and it's like, okay, this is not my Batman. This is not the Batman I grew up with. It's not even Frank Miller's Batman.
It's who own says thing.
The gun is the weapon of the enemy. This is Zack Snyder's interpretation of Batman. And it's different, but it's familiar at the same time. And I still think this is my favorite Batman on screen.
Yeah, it's always been like, okay, this actor is like a really good Bruce Wayne, this one's a really good Batman. Kind of that, like, in terms of like the most recent one, Christian Bale, he was a good Bruce Wayne, but not a very good Batman. I feel like Ben Affleck's been only the real one that's, he has a good, like, what am I trying to say? Like, a good even set of both of them.
Yeah, the two personalities. And you can definitely tell it. Like, there's the big kind of party gala scene in Lex Luthor's place. And he acts like this very kind of
he acts like
guy.
The billionaire
like,
playboy.
Oh, I thought I was going to the bathroom. Sorry, I got lost. And at the same time, he's just like, as soon as Mercy Graves' character turns away, he's drops the face, drops the facade, goes back to doing his good old hacking things. And it's like, this is truly the one Batman that we see both detective and
brute force
fighter.
Yeah.
And he's a very heavy Batman. Like, he's
you can tell, like, he's
in general.
Like, just watching him, like, even from the trailer where the warehouse scene, like, that's probably one of the best fight scenes, like, choreography-wise in the entire movie. But even then, he just seems so slow. Like, I mean, I guess if they're going with an older Batman, he would be slow, and especially if it's supposed to be an interpretation of Frank Miller, that makes sense. It's just like, he's so big, and like, even just like watching him move, like, Ben Affleck's like upper body's just massive.
Ben Affleck's like 6'4", 210 pounds during the filming of that movie.
And he almost looks like a comfortable movie.
Yeah, he's massive. And the only real time that we see him be this moving fluid force is at the very beginning when our first introduction to this Batman. And then during that same fight scene in the warehouse, which is like the third trailer.
Yeah.
He's very fluid at the beginning, but once he makes his presence known, it's just all brute force from there.
So, and then, of course, Wonder Woman's, they feature pretty much all of the characters in Justice League in some sense. Wonder Woman has the biggest spotlight that, like, I thought she was just going to be kind of a cameo, but she actually has a pretty intricate role in the movie. I was a little surprised.
Yeah, they don't really reveal her motivations against Lex.
Which,
but we realize that she realizes there's something fishy. Everyone realizes Lex Luthor's up to no good.
Just everybody. And then you, like, when you kind of, like, see the pieces together, you're like, okay, yeah, it was really... Okay, this was Lex's plan, like, throughout the whole thing. Like, you start seeing bits and pieces, like, okay, this led to this, this led to this.
And one of my favorite things about Wonder Woman, since we're on that topic, during the final fight against Doomsday, who's in the second trailer.
Everybody knew about.
I'm not trying to be spoilers. But during the second trailer, she's just smiling the entire time.
That was like...
It's a very...
It's very Goddess of War.
It's a very Azzarello, Greg, Rucka kind of thing. And apparently, no one told her to smile. That was just Gal...
She's just having fun.
Yeah, she... Gal Gadot did that as her own thing. Like Zack Snyder said, I didn't tell her to smile. It was a very her thing, and it was just like, yes, that's our Wonder Woman, though. She smiles during the fight.
She was honestly one of my favorite parts of that whole movie. It was just, when she comes up on screen, like, at least in our theater, there wasn't much, like, applause, but apparently, like, in, like, other theaters, like, everybody just goes wild for her, which I think is great. Like, she was just one of my favorite parts. Like, she looked great. She actually had a role in the movie, and I'm really looking forward to the Wonder Woman solo movie now, especially since they kind of, like, tied that into this a little bit.
Yeah, and one of the things that we talked about after the theater, or after we left the theater, was the things they set up. Like, at the very end,
there's a lot of
Bruce Wayne talking. It's like, I want to find more people like you.
They will have to unite. And then there's this line where Wonder Woman's like, how do you know they'll fight? And... Batman just standing there is like, I have a feeling.
And throughout the entire movie, he has these nightmares. Even the little toy figure of him is called the Nightmare Batman.
Which I'm starting to think they might be more than nightmares.
And again, the leading theory I saw of this is that during one point in the movie, we see Batman kind of dreaming at his desk. It's that dictator Superman dream, and then you see these flying creatures, and you didn't realize. I'm like, oh yeah, dude, those are totally parademons. He's like, what? I thought they were like man bats. I'm like, no, those are parademons.
Yeah, I was confused. I was like, why would he? What are these things? Why are these here?
And it harkens. Shout out to Lord Harkins. It goes back to like that '90s Superman animated show that Bruce Timm did, where Superman was. He believed himself to be the son of Darkseid at one point. So it's like, oh, this is a really cool kind of overlap. And then after that nightmare, you know, Bruce wakes up, like, scared out of his wits. And then another character pops up, Crisis on Infinite Earth style, where he's talking and slowly he's dissolving at the same time.
You're just like, what is happening?
What's going on? And looking at that again and thinking about it, it's like, oh, it's probably another dream. But the papers at the end of that sequence where that character appears is still up in the air. So it's like, oh, maybe it's not a dream.
Some sort of like either multiverse or like some sort of alternate timeline trying to interact with it.
And you can probably guess what character that is due to the whole lightning flashes.
We haven't actually seen them in full costume.
Yeah, so his costume looks really bizarre. So some people are thinking it's a very kind of Flashpoint-esque thing where this character, possibly the Flash, that's what I believe, goes back in time, tries to warn Bruce of everything that's happening, and then he's slowly rewriting time itself as he goes. And it's that leading theory is, like, you see a couple of papers fly up after he wakes up the second time. So is it really a dream, or is it this overlapping, we're changing the future thing?
Yeah, and Lex Luthor, even, like, at the end, he's like, he claims that he's seen this future and he knows what's coming, and that's why he, like, did everything he did in the movie. Or that was, like, one of his motivations, at least.
Yeah, and, you know, he's just sitting there ding, 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 and, like, you know,
the typical comic book box? Fan.
It's like, oh, yeah, that's the mother box and father box sound.
Well, they even, like, there's a one scene where they, like, reveal Cyborg, and if you've read the current incarnation of Cyborg, he's been infused with the mother box at one point. So I'm pretty sure they've already, like, revealed that, hey, Darkseid is definitely, like, he's coming.
Yeah, why use parademons even? And then Nightmare Batman standing at the cliff, and there's the giant Omega symbol burned into the ground, and it's like, okay, I would say it's a Geoff Johns thing, because that's very reminiscent of the New 52, where Darkseid was the first enemy that the Justice League all came together to fight.
And it just makes sense in, like, the grand scheme of what they want to do with the whole thing. Like, Darkseid makes the most sense if they're going to have a two-part Justice League movie. If Avengers is doing Infinity War with Thanos, one of their biggest enemies, like, arguably Galactus is a bigger threat, but...
They don't have the rights to Galactus.
Exactly. Darkseid just makes the most sense for what they're going to do.
It makes me giddy. Like, I was smiling like a little fanboy the entire time, especially when they do that Frank Miller-esque Batman's against this building and lightning flashes so behind them before he grapples away. And it's like, that's just such a nice little subtle thing. And, you know, everyone is super into it. And at this point, Ben Affleck has confirmed he's working with Geoff Johns on something. And
I thought it was like, I'm pretty sure they already said it was the Batman solo movie.
Yeah. So they're talking together, and it's really funny because during the Rebirth stream yesterday, they did a little clip holding up Geoff Johns' Rebirth number one, and Ben Affleck just goes, "I will read anything Geoff Johns writes."
He is a fucking genius.
Yeah. So I believe, personally, this is why Geoff Johns took a step back from
he's doing gonna be so busy with
the comics,
the movies.
It's really weird to see him not on a monthly book for Rebirth, but to see him try to do this overhaul of the DC cinematic universe. You know, he's essentially becoming the Kevin Feige of DC, and a lot of people are saying it's like he needs to be the DC Kevin Feige, but it's at the same time,
Geoff Johns would get so, like, wrapped up with it.
He's the walking encyclopedia of DC, to the point it's like, yeah, you should do this, you should do this, telling Zack Snyder, who basically directs every single DCCU movie now, other than, I think, Aquaman and Wonder Woman itself.
Yeah, Wonder Woman's almost done, but I think they're completely done with filming. Like, even though the movie's supposed to come out next year, I don't even know if they've had a release date. I'm gonna look that up. Wonder Woman movie release date. Oh no, they did. June 23rd, next year.
Nice.
So yeah, I imagine filming's been done with that by now. And then you said that they were already gonna start filming for Justice League.
Starts in 2 weeks. But yeah, it's Zack Snyder confirmed already. It's like, we're gonna start filming in 2 weeks. He did a picture with Jason Momoa on set, and you see a bunch of costumes behind him.
So good.
And you for sure see the Mara costume. You for sure see what might be the Flash costume. Like, our only hint to that was that DC special with Geoff Johns and Kevin Smith, where they show concept art of Ezra Miller.
Well, that's supposed to be that whole, like, special look thing's supposed to be like a running show now. I think it's supposed to. I can't remember if they said when it was supposed to premiere. I think it's supposed to be like a 30-minute thing, like after Legends of Tomorrow, I want to say, and Kevin Smith hosting it. Like, I think it's just supposed to be like a bunch of behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of cool. It's very reminiscent of the Talking Dead.
That, yeah, exactly. It's that same format. Chris Hardwick.
Yeah.
All those kind of shows.
Just having all the actors there, it's talking about the episode immediately with all the spoilers.
Like, immediate reactions.
Really entertaining.
But, yeah. So, like I said, my biggest issue is probably the pacing of the whole movie. It is kind of... So, I know a lot of people's worry going into it is it kind of a convoluted mess, and to a degree, I wouldn't say convoluted mess, but just kind of a mess at points, like, it just kind of jumps all over the place randomly, but at least, like, the last, probably, the final, like, the final act of the movie is probably the most clean, probably because it's just a big battle,
but... Yeah, and, I think reading some interviews with Zack Snyder, they cut a lot out of the movie, and then
yeah, his I'm really looking forward to this.
It's almost like an entire 30-minute sequence of just stuff, and we'll see Jenna Malone be Barbara Gordon in that same deleted scenes idea. And it's like, for a 2.5-hour movie, trying to establish everything that Marvel has done in the past.
They had, what, four movies before they even got to Avengers?
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it's not that bad of a job. You're introducing all these things. You introduced all
of the Trinity.
Cameo characters, Flash, Cyborg, Aquaman.
Which was probably the best way they could have done
that. Yeah, it wasn't like, okay, we're going to shoehorn this character into the movie just like those giant convoluted mess movies. But it's like, it was very meaningful and it was very purposeful. Mm-hmm. My favorite part being that when Diana Prince opens her own file, you scroll down and you see the picture
from
1918, and Bruce Wayne's like, it is you. And like, you kind of, you really wonder, it's like, yes, I already know Wonder Woman, yes, I know she's, this interpretation of hers lived for 5,000 years, but in the interviews, again, she says that in the past 100 years, in the past century, it made her lose hope in humanity, and watching Superman and Batman come out of the foil to fight Doomsday kind of re-inspired her to come back, and she and Bruce are talking at various points in the movie, really establishing that slow kind of just that slow connection that would eventually build up to the Justice League, perhaps.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, their relationship was actually, like, pretty solid for what they did, especially at the end. It's like, it almost seems like the next, like, Justice League Part 1 is them gonna be, like, almost, like, tagging along together to, like, just finding out all of them. It's like, we have to come together, we have to fight, instead of, like, all the heroes just, like, coming out of the woodwork. Because it seems like they're all just, like, oh, we don't want to be known about. Like, quit, like, Aquaman, like, he comes up, he's just, like, just zooms off screen, he's like,
after breaking a camera.
He's like, yep, can't find me, and then Ezra Miller as Flash, he's just, like, you don't even see his costume, he's just, like, uses his speed force for, like, petty things.
Yeah, you don't, petty things, stop being a crime's not petty, you don't but, like, see anyone established
petty
as
crimes,
a hero.
I guess.
And that's one of the cool things, you do not see anyone as an established hero other than Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, technically. So it's very interesting trying to see them. You know, Zack Snyder says his idea of the Justice League film would be Batman recruiting everyone Seven Samurai style, which I'm like, oh, that's really cool. It just, it's a very Zack Snyder move. It's like, we gotta recruit everyone. But watching this all unfold, I'm excited to see everything unfold.
I am too. I like what they've set up. I like that it's its own thing, like, it takes inspiration from the source material, but doesn't follow it to a T, like, exactly. But I mean, there's small call-outs, like the Dark Knight Returns lightning flash that's really quick. And then, especially at the end, I'm not going to spoil it, just because this one, I was surprised that they actually went with this, or what they did with the ending, but it's just kind of interesting to see that they have all these little call-outs to the source material, and then they have their own thing that they're going with.
And, you know, the one thing every single comic book fan wants is to see their favorite comic on the screen. That's never going to happen.
No.
Realistically, it will
never
happen.
It's just not physically possible.
And it's something... They don't want to retell the same stories. They want to flip them on its head. It would be pulling, like, I'm not anything against Marvel, but retelling the same stories with the same basic principle behind them, it's boring. Like, I love, absolutely love and adore the Court of Owls stories. I love it. I was really excited for the it was very entertaining to see how different it was from that source material.
It's like, oh, we're gonna use this established villain now, but in a different way than we that was done in the comics.
Yes, it's like I said, it's very boring to see the same thing be repeated. And like I said, Marvel's doing their Civil War 2, there's the Apocalypse Wars, Secret Wars is coming back. At least DC will take the chance and take the risk of creating these new storylines, making sure that they exist within their own universe that fits with the correct overhaul. Like, even in the Justice League animated show, man, they used so much of the original source material, but they changed it in their own degrees. They changed the Batman-Wonder Woman relationship. They changed the Superman-Wonder Woman relationship. They changed literal storylines, but did it in a very purposeful manner. Like, what was it? My favorite story is the, goodness, what is it called? The Black Mercy, where Superman is infected by this psychic plant. By Mongol.
Yeah, the man who has it all story.
Yeah, the man who has it all. In the original storyline, it's Batman, Jason Todd, and Wonder Woman there to save Superman from this dream. But in the animated show, you have just Batman and Wonder Woman, you know, doing the whole Bruce Timm teases, you know, what do you get a man for who has everything? Mm-hmm. Cash. And you, at the same time, you have the two of them, you know, and fighting Mongol, and then you have Superman dreaming of this new Krypton where his wife looks like an amalgamation of Lois Lane and Lana Lang, and you have their son Van-El, and you just get these really emotional heartbeats that you may not get from a comic book that is still critically acclaimed. Yeah. Because you see it on screen, you get to hear the voices for yourself. Anytime I read a Batman comic, I still hear Kevin Conroy.
Yep, that's every time, exactly
I hear. And, you know, I'm coming to the point now, maybe I'm starting to hear the new Superman as Henry Cavill, but you get these ideas in your head very quickly and you will never let them go. Mm-hmm. My Batman will always be Kevin Conroy.
Yep, that's...
But the best live-action Batman is now Ben Affleck. So, yeah. That's what I had to say about boring remakes.
So, just looked up an article today. So, Batman v Superman's already made $170 million just domestically. And if I remember, I don't think it's been released internationally yet. So, and one of the quotes from... What is this guy? I don't even know what this guy is. It says, no one cared about the reviews. They didn't matter. Mainly because it's down to a 29% score on Rotten Tomatoes. But again, it's not supposed to be a critics movie. Because apparently audiences are giving it an overall B grade. So about an 75-80% overall. Which, that's pretty good. Like, it's good to see that, okay, even if critics are smashing this down, people are still going to see it and still enjoying it.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not a movie for the critics. It's not a Mad Max. It's not a insert critically acclaimed movie, Avatar. It's something that was made for a specific and intended audience. This movie is dark.
It's for DC fans.
It could have been rated R. This is not your Marvel movie.
No, it doesn't have that formula. I think that's the biggest issue, is a lot of critics are like, they went in with the preconceived notions of what the Marvel movies have set up because they've had so many already. And it's like, but DC finally puts one out and they're like, oh, it's not what we wanted, or not what we expected, really.
And one of the things that we talked about leaving the theater, it was just very refreshing watching a superhero movie that's not a Marvel movie. And like I said, good lord, I enjoyed myself thoroughly. This movie was made for comic fans, not for a general audience like Marvel fans, not like the same cookie cutter movie. Man, my friend on Facebook loves Ant-Man. the movie. Does not read the comics, does not care about any of the comics, but they love the Ant-Man movie, and then they absolutely hated the Batman movie because it wasn't funny. And if you tell me that movie was not funny, and you have Mr. Irons as Alfred.
Sassy Alfred.
Sassy Alfred. Come on. You cannot get better than those characterizations. And it's like, well,
Ant-Man was really funny. The main character was really funny. He wasn't serious at all.
And it's like, well, this is a serious movie.
The character. Do you see Batman making quips in the comics? No. He like maybe makes one every like 25 issues, and it's like a one-line thing. Like, I'll bring up the most recent issue, Batman 50. There, probably the funniest line in the whole thing is, "Hello, Jim. Who died and made you Batman?" Yeah. Like, that's... And then it's all business again. Batman is not a funny character. He has his moments, but that's what Dick Grayson's for. That's what Damian's for. Like, he's supposed to be the serious, all business, we have a mission. Like, if you're going into Batman v Superman expecting a comedy or even just quips left and right, you're not gonna get that. There's like maybe one or two in the entire thing where I chuckled. I was like, ah, that's funny.
Yeah, and I think the joke, all jokes aside, and all literal jokes aside, that detracts me from the movie at certain points. So I'm merely curious because Civil War is supposed to be the darkest Marvel movie yet. It starts with the death, ends with the death, and by far the Captain America movies are probably the most serious ones.
Mm-hmm. And they deal with a lot of political issues.
And then what's happening is that, you know, Robert Downey Jr. says, yeah, this movie's my Iron Man 4. I'm not going to have any solo movies other than the last two Avengers things. And it's like, well, how are you really just going to... I really want to see how they establish the Civil War universe and establish if they're going to use any comedy. Like, Sam Wilson, he's a pretty comedic character established in Winter Soldier.
He's pretty snarky.
And then you also have Ant-Man.
It's just
Ant-Man. Sorry, I do not have any things against Ant-Man as a character, but I just can't take Paul Rudd as his Ant-Man character. It just, it's something that I don't know.
Yeah.
Alrighty, moving forward and moving on.
Yeah. Also, if you don't get excited when Wonder Woman finally appears on screen in full costume and her track is just going in the background, I don't know what else to say for you. Like, that was probably the most exciting thing, and I've probably listened to that single track from the soundtrack like 15 times the next day, just because I loved it so much. But yeah, again, we both liked it. Go and see it for yourself. Like, really, just form your own opinion on it. It's been interesting seeing people's reactions, because it's like, oh yeah, I like this part, but I didn't like this part. Like, I've seen a lot of people like the sassy Alfred. I've seen people not like the sassy Alfred. Like,
he's not British enough. That was one of the reviews I saw.
He's Cockney. And
by no means do we say this is the best superhero movie ever.
Oh god, no.
But we liked it.
It's very enjoyable, and it's a good starting point for the rest of the DCU. So, now, on to actual comics.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier with Geoff Johns and his Rebirth thing, but yesterday they did the DC Rebirth live stream, hashtag not a reboot.
At WonderCon.
And
they really really established that point that it is not a reboot, it is a continuation.
It's more like a
restart?
It's not even a restart. It's just they're just relaunching everything. They're pulling a Marvel. Marvel does this. I have a lot of qualms with Marvel sometimes, but Marvel does this thing where every story is dependent on the Avengers storyline. So when I first got started into comics, they had the Marvel Revolution. And then when Avengers had their whole big cataclysmic events,
Time Runs Out, that was like the big storyline.
They had Marvel Now. When Marvel Avengers did their whole thing in Marvel Now, did Secret Wars. And now it's all new, all different. So it's just a rebranding rather than a full reboot.
Mm-hmm.
And
I honestly think it's going to be what DC needs.
Yeah, they brought a lot of new talent that we're going to talk about, and it's going to be some stuff about creators, and then just like these new people who have never actually interacted with comics as before, writing them as a medium.
And we've seen that before. I've seen it done well with Silk. Robbie Thompson, the writer, was a writer on Supernatural. Silk was his first comic, and personally, I think he did a great job with it.
Yeah, and so let's...
Should we just go down the list?
I think we should just talk about some highlights.
Okay, and so...
The biggest highlight for me, and just one of my favorite things, like I said, all of the things that happened at that thing made me really giddy, and
It was like a slow burn for me. Like, I was super excited with all the Bat Family stuff and like some of the Superman stuff. Then they had all the like other characters like Wonder Woman, Aquaman, stuff like that. And then like the last bit of it just kind of fell flat for me.
And yeah, just starting off, I'm a very big... we've said multiple times we're very big DC people. I'm a very big Gotham person. And they brought out the Batman team first. And they're like, yeah, introducing the new writer for Batman, Tom King. And it's like, oh, that's not a surprise at all.
That was rumored a while ago. It's like, okay, that makes the most sense.
It was funny because just watching Bleeding Cool go back and forth for a while, and then, like, this week they solidify their position. Yeah, Tom King's going to be on Batman. And that was probably one of my favorite things. Mm-hmm. Just, I loved him on Grayson.
I think he'll do great.
Yeah, and he talks with Snyder about
a lot of the characterization. He's worked with Batman before already, so...
And he stated, it's like, I want to do a very Scott thing. I want to continue this sort of renaissance that Scott has brought to the table with Batman, you know? Mm-hmm. And, it makes me personally sad because the Grayson team is now split up, but they still... are together in a way. Yeah. So, my favorite thing, Tom King's on Batman. Tim Seeley, who I got to see at C2E2 last week, talking to him about how much I love Grayson and hope to see him on Nightwing. Surprised he's the rider on Nightwing. Yeah. But the fact that Nightwing
side note, Tim Seeley's been I'm pretty sure he took the reins of this last Grayson arc.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think Tom King worked on it at all.
It
might have been like an issue or two, like, but
did the story, but
it's a bit Seeley took the script. It seems like Seeley kind of took the reins of it.
But before everything, just the fact that Dick Grayson is back in the black and blue just made me the giddiest little thing ever. Sadly, no finger stripes.
There's like something on the gloves.
Yeah, I'm all about the classic, or not even classic, the prior to Flashpoint, very Teen Titans, Dick Grayson.
Mm-hmm. Also, side note on Batman 1, the artists are David Finch and Michael Yanin. That's excellent. Like, both fantastic artists, so it's gonna look pretty, and it has a very, very solid writer.
And your favorite thing that we were talking about was the resurgence of Detective Comics.
Detective Comics is probably the highlight for me, mainly because it's pretty much, like, almost jumping off of where Batman and Robin Eternal ends. From what it seems, because we got Stephanie Brown as Spoiler, we have Cassandra Cain in a very Black Bat-esque suit, and I actually was looking at the image again today, where is it?
It's a combination of her original Batgirl costume with the cowl, completely
black. And she has, like, the stripes down her side with the yellow, which looks great. Probably the biggest, like, question mark for me is Clayface on the team. Like, that was probably the biggest, like,
So the full team is Batman, Batwoman, Cassandra Cain, Stephanie Brown as Spoiler, Tim Drake in a very red and green Robin,
I just noticed. I noticed this morning when I looked at the image. Tim Drake still has a double R on his symbol, so I don't think he's removing the identity as Red Robin. I think he just has a different costume now.
Yeah, and it just goes back to the classic Tim Drake outfit when he was Robin. It's the red and the green, the yellow inside of the black cape. And, you know, I really... Again, their whole idea behind Rebirth was bringing back legacy to these characters, bringing back their families. So seeing Detective Comics go from this one-man operation, even when it was Francis Menapol writing about the police department, or Francis Menapol again doing a solo story about just Batman, it brings this family together. It has Batman and Batwoman leading the team, and James Tynan is the writer for it, and it's like, this is a very
he's been handling these characters now for like probably the last year and a half, almost 2 years. So I have complete trust in him. I think it's going to be, it's probably going to be the highlight of all the new books that are coming out. Like, that's, this is the one I'm most excited for, because I didn't read Detective Comics week or monthly, so I'm very excited to get into this, especially since they went back to the old numbering scheme at 934. All right. Be cool to see it hit 1,000.
So your whole highlight, again, as the DC Batman Gotham person, I love everything, but the biggest highlight,
this
for
was
me
probably the second biggest
was
thing,
Greg Rucka coming back to Wonder Woman, and he has
Nicholas Scott and William Sharp as his artists.
Yeah, and his story is essentially going to be this back and forth thing where odd number issues take place in the modern day contemporary time, and then Nicole Scott and Greg Rucka are doing what essentially is the Wonder Woman Year One. And, you know, his bailout from DC happened prior to Flashpoint, where he got in this throwdown thing with editorial. I don't know the full story, but to see him come back to this character got me
like
really excited.
A big name character. And this was one of the rumored people on the book. It was like, I think like a month out, like people are like, oh, it's probably going to be Greg Rucka or Marguerite Bennett on this book. I would have liked to see Marguerite Bennett, but the fact that Greg Rucka came back to DC, that's huge.
Well, you can't say no to Wonder Woman.
No, you can't.
I'm going to tell one story, and it's going to be the best story I can ever tell.
Yeah.
And he said on his Tumblr that, you know, his coming back, he wants to kind of it was a very hard decision for him. He didn't know whether or not he wanted to come back, but the opportunity to do this character was very big for him. I'm just really excited for it. I love Wonder Woman. I love Azzarello's run on Wonder Woman. And I love Rucka's run on her, too. It was my first interaction with Wonder Woman comics. Mm-hmm. So seeing him come back and hopefully reintroduce some of these characters, like the Minotaur that cooks Diana breakfast every once in a while. His name escapes me. But
Steve Trevor's on this. I see Cheetah in the background on the promo image, and Steve Trevor in his like covert op suit.
Mm-hmm.
So we got some classic Wonder Woman villains and allies slash. It's been interesting to see Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor, because since I jumped into comics fairly recently, like all I knew is Steve Trevor and Wonder Woman were a thing. But in the New 52, it seems like they've had a lot of conflict, especially with, like, oh, Steve Trevor's trying to do the best for humanity, and Wonder Woman's trying to help, but she also has her own ideals and goals that she wants to follow. So it seems like it could be one of those conflicts again with the character.
And probably, so the Greg Rucka thing was the biggest thing for me, and then seeing Tom King and Tim Seeley move on from Grayson into these larger books, you know, hopefully completing their goal of making Dick Grayson even larger than life. But the other big news that I really enjoyed was during the panel, you know, they have the seven people at the writer for Batman, writer for Detective, writer for Batgirl, Birds of Prey. And then someone from the audience just yells out, "Where's Scott Snyder?" And Jeff Johns kind of is like, "All right. Don't worry. He's right here behind stage. Let's introduce Scott Snyder and the artist for his book, John Romita Jr." So they bring him out, and in typical Scott Snyder fashion, it's like, "I wanted to write the villains." He's been talking about this Two-Face story for almost like a year.
Probably every single time. Like, probably, and like, especially at C2E2 when we went to his panel, I think he mentioned that Two-Face story like 4 times. I'm just like, So do we finally get on whatever project he works on next?
And so
that was what he opened with.
The really cool thing about his book is All-Star Batman, and it's not a continuation of the Frank Miller, Jim Lee, All-Star
this
Batman
is
and Robin.
Completely new
it's
thing.
Within the contemporary DC universe now. And the cool thing is that each arc is going to be by a different artist. So John Romita Jr. and Scott Snyder are going to be doing this Two-Face arc together.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next person on the list is Jock. And for those of you who don't know who Jock is, he's the guy who did Black Mirror with Scott Snyder when he did Detective Comics.
And he's done Witches, he's done so many things with Scott
and
Snyder.
And then Sean Gordon Murphy's the third artist that they've announced. And I absolutely love Sean Gordon Murphy on Tokyo Ghost and The Wake. He did The Wake with Scott Snyder. Tokyo Ghost was with Rick Remender over at Image. But it's a very... His style is a very kind of scratchy, horror-esque thing. So I would love to see what villain he and Scott do together.
Yeah, I'm actually curious of that. Just kind of... Because they like kind of highlight all of the villains that they're going to use. And it'd be interesting... I'm curious to see which one Jock's going to be doing. So kind of going with similar... Similar things going with Snyder, with an artist that's worked with him extensively. One of the biggest surprises for me was Raphael Albuquerque is going to be doing the art on Batgirl. And I already, like, just the promo image they have for it, which I want to say could be the first cover, but I guess we'll see. But it's just like, I love Albuquerque's work, and it's just so crazy to see, like, him do a character that I like reading so much, so...
And he, those of you who don't know, he did the art on the Batgirl annual in this latest Burnside arc, where it was just all... There was no word captions, it was like Batgirl communicating through text, but Hope Larson and Raphael Albuquerque are going to be taking Batgirl out of Burnside, and she's going to be traveling the world. The first arc is in Asia, so it's like, oh, cool, where's this going to lead up to?
It seems like it's going to be I imagine it's probably going to be in more of an adult book, just because of the way Albuquerque, like, draws and, like, portrays characters. And I like his work on how he's... They're still using the new suit, which I know some people have mixed opinions on. I know a lot of people hate the boots, which I found hilarious that, just as a side note, Gail Simone references those boots in the last Secret Six issue from this last week, but that's a whole different topic. But I think it'll be good. I haven't read anything Hope Larson is. She's completely new to me, so I'm curious to see what she does with it.
And the other Batgirl book that got announced was Batgirl and the Birds of Prey. So everyone was kind of crossing their fingers on Gail Simone coming back to it. But it's going to be a team book with Batgirl, Oracle, and Huntress, written by...
Well, Oracle's the antagonist. Somebody's...
Or a fake Oracle.
Yeah, somebody's impersonating Oracle.
Yeah, and the team on this is Julie Benson and Shauna Benson.
Which...
They are the writers from The 100, and if you don't watch... The 100 on CW, it's one of the most entertaining new shows to come out of this whole dystopian universe idea. So watch it. You need to. It's fantastic. And I'm really excited to see these two ladies take on comic books for the first time.
Yeah, well, this was going back to what I said about Robbie Thompson taking on Silk. That was his first work. This is their first comic book, and... Just the way I've seen it, like, play out before, it's like, it's gone well before, so I'm fingers crossed that it turns out well again.
And speaking of writers who don't traditionally work on comics, the new Cyborg team got me really excited. It's John Semper with Will Conrad and Paul...
I don't know anything he's
Pelletier. Done. And John Semper, for those of you who don't know, he did a lot of his work within the world of animation. He did the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, and he also did Static Shock.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is cool. I love how the writers on Static brought a lot of diversity into the show. And so hopefully we get to see some of that build up again in Cyborg, where the current Cyborg arc is very much... Cyborg trying to be human again. This next arc that John Semper is writing is, where does the soul of the machine end and where does the soul of the human that is Victor Stone begin? Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to see a lot of these DC books lately work on the dichotomy between what does it mean to be a hero, what does it mean to be human, and just the general DC outlook that DC is all about regular people trying to be superheroes, whereas the Marvel approach is superheroes trying to be human. So it's really... I'm really excited to see anything, everything from Rebirth.
Yeah. Do you want... What's another one? Oh, another one I found interesting was they're bringing back Blue Beetle. Jaime Reyes is coming back. And then Ted Kord's also going to be there as his mentor, which I know Zach's excited about. So maybe we'll get to see Booster in there? Maybe
Keith he'll show Keith Giffen, man. He's... amazing. I'm more of the comic book encyclopedia than my fellow Zach is, but Keith Giffen and J.M. Mattis did the amazing Justice League International run back in the day, And just to see him come back to these characters, see him come back to Ted Kord, see him work on this interpretation of Jaime Reyes is really exciting. And what I discovered recently, you know, DC's trying to relaunch the Hanna-Barbera line again, and there's Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, or Scooby Apocalypse, one of the two, and it's written by Keith Giffen and James DeMatteis, and I'm like, oh dear God, I need to read this book. Mm-hmm. So they write very niche, very comedic sci-fi stories. They do the Justice League 3000 run right now for DC, which is, I think, ending this... after this arc. So it's really cool to see them. Again, I love their stuff. Just the comedic, very sci-fi-esque approach to the writing.
So this was probably like the biggest and saddest thing I had to see. You already knew what my reaction would be. Freaking Red Hood still has goddamn Scott Lobdell on it. And it's just like, this was the moment. It's like, I've been waiting. There's been two relaunches in the last year. Or this will be the second one within, like, a year. It's just like, why can't there be a different writer? I do not like his portrayal of Jason Todd. There's, like, maybe, like, every, like, 20 issues, there's, like, maybe one line of dialogue where it's like, oh, is there character development there? Oh, nope, he's going back to his whatever he likes to do. It's just so frustrating to see that. It's just like,
And the pitch behind the book is that Jason is picking up two new outlaws, kind of watching over them, and it's...
based on the image, it looks like Bizarro, and I don't even know
who the other person is. It's Artemis from the Amazons. They confirmed that during the panel. But it's just really funny because to see him go from... But it makes sense, because you have Roy Harper, who's now going to be in the Titans group with Nightwing, Donna, Garth, and Omen. And then you have Starfire, who's going to be a part of the Teen Titans. And it goes back to, I don't know if I said this in the last podcast, but it's very reminiscent of the new DC animated movie, mm-hmm. where Starfire is leading the new Teen Titans that features Damian and Raven and Beast Boy. So, you know, Geoff Johns kind of talked about this, whereas it seems like Marvel kind of adopts things from the MCU to make it more, to kind of bring in more readers. DC will just kind of point grab, just kind of do it on their own, and then see how, not necessarily how the films influence the comic, but to see how they can do two different interpretations on it. All right, and so we're still talking about... we're just jumping everywhere.
Yeah, we're just going... I have the page
open. One of my favorite things, though, is to see Francis Menapal. He's writing the new Trinity, and he's doing both writing and art for it.
It looks so good.
And at C2E2, I was fortunate enough to stand in a line for half an hour before his autographs, and just watching him paint and draw was just really cool. And his style is just really unique. I'm really excited to see what he does with the Trinity. Again, we don't know. It was part of the lightning round of titles where they just say, here's the book, here's the team, here's who's in the book, and we won't tell you what the story is. Whereas with the Bat family and the Superman family and some of the other Justice Leaguers, we got a very clear pitch on the story arc.
A lot of the big name books. Something I find that's kind of cool that they're doing. So if you haven't been reading the current Flash storyline, or like since... issue 30. They've been trying to... there's this new Wally that they've been... new Wally West, who's Iris's cousin, if I remember properly. Who they're kind of doing like what the Flash TV show has been doing, where it's this... sure you could argue that they're just throwing in diversity for diversity's sake, but they have this... Iris's cousin is of black descent, and it's kind of cool that Wally, in the new Flash promo that they've revealed, who the writer from the comic Nailbiter is doing, which I've not read Nailbiter, I don't know this guy's work. It sounds interesting, though. I like what the arc that he's set up, which apparently there's like a speed horse storm, and all these people become speedsters, which is pretty cool. Which they've already teased, if you haven't been reading Flash, they kind of teased before that this new Wally West is going to become Kid Flash of some sort. And it's kind of... in the promo art for Flash, you see Wally West as Kid Flash, and then in Teen Titans, it's also that same Wally West, which I think is really cool that they're adopting this new take on Wally.
I agree. I don't know what happened. I walked away for a second.
He walked away from the mic, so I kind of went on a tangent about how I think it's cool that Wally's
going. I'm kind of sad that they didn't keep the silver and red costume that they showed at Future's End. It's weird. Back to the yellow and red.
See, but on the Flash promo, it looks like it's the silver and red one. Like, that doesn't look yellow with all the yellow in the image. It looks like the silver and red one that he has in the Flash or the Future's End.
Alrighty.
But
also, again, just bouncing everywhere since we're talking about Justice League members now. The new Supergirl series is written by Steve Orlando. For those of you that don't know, he wrote the Midnighter series. He does a lot in bringing old Wildstorm characters back around. I like Steve Orlando. He's a very entertaining writer. It looks like a fun book. Yeah, and the very best part of the new Supergirl book is that they got rid of the red diaper of the new 52, and she's in kind of a combination of the classic outfit and the new TV show outfit where she has the little finger sleeve.
Yeah, and she has the tall, like, thigh-high boots with the classic red skirt.
Yeah, I'm really excited. This is actually going to be the first... I pulled Supergirl during the Red Lanterns arc because I love what Charles Soule did with the Red Lanterns and Guy Gardner. So to see a less angry Kara is going to be very entertaining.
It looks like they're kind of it seems like it's almost like they've seen the success of the Supergirl TV show, she's an upbeat character in that show, and they're pretty much like taking that portrayal and throwing it back into comics, but still have its own independent storyline.
And that's the original kind of,
which makes sense. Supergirl. It's spoken to their audience, which it makes sense that they'll try to want to grab some new readers to that book.
Yep, and I personally cannot wait until Stephanie Brown and Kara meet again. What Brian Q. Miller did in his Batgirl run with Stephanie was just really entertaining. Those two characters became the closest of friends because just their personalities are so similar.
Yeah, so I'm going to pick a book that I didn't expect that I want to read, but I'm going to pick it up, and you pick a book that from this list that you didn't expect that you'd want to read. For me, it's Hellblazer. Like, I don't read much. I haven't read, like, much Constantine. The only Constantine I've had is, like, from when he's just, like, he shows up in other books. Like, when he's, that his take, or Marguerite Bennett's take on him in Bombshells, he's there for a bit. Or the Arrow TV show. I loved him in Arrow, so I think that's kind of what's, like, maybe I should give Constantine a bit of a read. And it's the fact that you said that they were bringing in Swamp Thing into the first storyline. I was like, I'm starting to kind of like go more towards that mystical side of DC, or like the almost the horror like base stuff.
Yeah. So the Hellblazer that Zach is talking about, the two leading protagonists are John Constantine and Swamp Thing, and I absolutely adore Swamp Thing. He's one of my favorite people ever. So to see him still receive a breath of life into this new universe, since a lot of the mystical DC stuff hasn't been selling well. Rest in peace to Justice League Dark.
Yeah.
But
one other thing, the new Green Lanterns book, which is a duo with the two new Green Lanterns they're introducing, which is Jessica Cruz, which I actually kind of like her character from what I've read in the Justice League, where she's tortured by Power Ring. And then it's Simon Baz, right? That's the second one. I don't know the character like at all. It's written by Sam Humphries, which he did Guardians of the Galaxy, right?
He did the Black Vortex arc.
That's right. He did that with Bendis.
Guardians of the Galaxy. He does the Star-Lord solo series, and he also did Star-Lord and Kitty Pryde. So he's very familiar to the cosmic universe.
So I'm gonna pick up that first issue at least and see what I think of it and maybe add it, because I really don't. The only Green Lantern storyline I've read is Blackest Night, so that's like my only influence on Green Lanterns, and watching the Green Lantern animated show from a while ago. So I'm gonna give it a shot and see what I think of it.
For all of you Simon Baz people, you know, if you don't know the character, Geoff Johns created the character with Green Lantern issue zero. I think that was one of his first introductions, and he's also featured in the first JLA run of the New 52 as you know, Amanda Waller built this Justice League team to take down the other Justice League. And, yeah, if you want to know more about that character, he exists. For me, I just want to read everything. It all looks really interesting. I literally read everything, whether it be that I pull the book or I wait for a trade to come out. But the surprise kind of shot in the dark that I didn't think I would want to read is Super Sons.
Yeah, even though not like no details have been released except like the basic plot
points. Chris Burns and Dennis Culver are writing with Jorge Jimenez doing art, and it's Damian Wayne meeting the son of the pre-Flashpoint Superman and Lois, John Kent. And one of the things I was going to talk about later with Lois and Clark this week, or this past week, was that you see John talking to Lois. It's like, why don't you tell me who we are? And he breaks out of these rope bonds and grabs a burning door so he and his mother don't die. So it's, I'm just really excited to see these two characters, seeing Damian and seeing John interact, because John's going to be very bright personality.
Such a split between the two.
Yeah, the juxtaposition's crazy. Especially even with how Damian's treated now by Ray Fox and Patrick Gleason and Robin, Son of Batman.
He's still kind
of
like...
He has brightness to him, but
he's still very broody. Yeah, he's still like angsty.
He's character. I'm the Son of Batman kind of thing. So I'm excited. I feel like that's going to be just a really fun book. And it's just going to be interesting. I want to read everything.
I want to give Superwoman a shot, which is written and drawn by Phil Jimenez. So it's just this completely new character. I don't know if it's going to be the Superwoman from the Justice League run, from the alternate Earth storyline. I don't know if it's that Superwoman or if it's completely, completely new.
Yeah, she looks like the All-Star Superman Lois and Lane, for those of you that read Grant Morrison's thing on that. Like I said, I'm a comic book encyclopedia, slowly but surely.
Yeah.
But, all of Rebirth looks really interesting. It has a lot of cool creators.
I think it's going to be a good, like, revitalization that they really need.
Yeah, and one thing I want to say before we move on, though, The Super-Man by Gene Luen Yang.
Or New Superman. That one's New Superman.
No, that's not. Superman something else.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I have the article pulled up in front of me.
I have the one that says Gene Yang is New Superman.
I have one that says The Super... Whatever. Anyways, whatever book
is Gene Yang. We're both talking about the Chinese Superman, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Mine says it's the new... It says New Superman.
All right.
And that's how they said it in the stream.
I'm excited for it because Gene Luen Yang does a very cool dichotomy between just two personalities. If you read American Born Chinese or if you read Saints and Boxers, he has very two dramatic cultures clashing all the time. And I think that's what he writes best. So seeing him come back to these new personalities within the universe, it'll be just a really fun thing to see. And just his character is like this really arrogant guy, and then
what was the character's name? It was still like Clark Kent.
Double alliterative.
Yeah,
but I can't remember
Kenji Kong. Name. That's what it is. Yeah. Kenji Kong.
So seeing that dichotomy, like I said, I love dichotomies between characters.
I feel like this is going to be a better Superman book for Gene Yang, because I read his latest arc on Superman, and I really wasn't impressed by it. Like, it wasn't really anything like that I hadn't seen before. It was like, Superman is like dealing with not having superpowers. Like, okay, that's an interesting plot point, but in the end, it's just like, oh, I realize that I don't need superpowers to still be a hero and be a symbol for people. Like, I feel like this is, like you said, he did an American-born Chinese, and this is a Chinese Superman, a culture he cares about a lot. So I think this is going to be a lot more up his wheelhouse.
As Jim Lee and Dan Didio joked, he is the ambassador for young people. Like, he is the YA graphic novelist.
He did the Avatar comics for a while.
Yeah, so to see him on them too, have sure. essentially what is a creative-owned character... will be really fun to see, rather than him trying to take on this very established character that people have a ton of preconceived notions about already.
Yeah. Okay, so we've been going on it for about an hour. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about Rebirth? I think I hit all the points I wanted.
Buy everything.
Get DC. I really want DC to do well on this. Like, I feel like this is gonna turn out well for them. Just because, especially as of late, most of the Marvel books, except the like few I pull, haven't really impressed me. Like, they've just been really lackluster. Like we talked about it before. It's just like, it seems like everybody's just reacting to things, except it seems like a lot of the solo books have been doing well, and it was like a, like one or two team books that I like to read, like A-Force and Ultimates. But I feel like DC's gonna overtake like what I read primarily. Like, I already like reset my pull list. It's like over half of it is DC now for Rebirth stuff. So I'm really hoping that it does well. But so let's. We're gonna go back to our pick of the week segment to finish up the podcast. I think we've been talking a good amount. I think we got all the interesting points for Rebirth and Batman v Superman out. So you want to start off with your pick of the week, or are you still thinking?
My pick of the week is Superman Lois and Clark by Dan Jurgens, who's also gonna be taking over Action Comics when Rebirth happens. And he is a very... he is the man who gave life and also killed Superman. He was the person who wrote the rise of the Superman, who gave us Steel, who gave us Cyborg Superman, who gave us Superboy. So all these new characters kind of coming around. But my favorite thing, though, is that in this issue, it deals a lot with John realizing... why does Dad look like Superman? Who are we? Who are you? Why? Who is Superman? Why is Dad not here? How do you know everything's gonna be okay? We're trapped in a burning building. Why? And as he breaks out of these rope bonds, why am I able to do this? So they're setting it up for that Super Sons book. But just, I love his take on Superman and Lois because it's very familiar. It's very... pre-Flashpoint. And the Superman that Dan Jurgens is going to be writing about in Action Comics is that pre-Flashpoint Superman with a new suit. He's not going to be all incognito with the black suit now. But then that begs the question, what happens to the new 52 Superman?
It's he still has his own solo series. It's just that whenever they eventually meet, which I... they don't ever meet.
It's next month.
Is it supposed to be next
month? Yeah, so Peter Tomasi is going to write the League of Supermen arc for April and May leading into Rebirth. And it features the two Supermen meeting for the first time. And like I said, I'm just really excited. I just love characters. I love DC's characters. Yeah. I promise one day I might pick a Marvel book. But the only Marvel book I got this week was Star Wars, so... Can't tell you.
Yep. So my pick, it's like I wanted to say Batman 50 just because it was such a phenomenal issue, but
that was almost like a no.
We both agreed that was a no just because it was like, yeah, it's a given. If you're not reading Batman, what are you doing? So I'm gonna say Ultimates this week. Mainly because it's probably been my favorite team books out of all the Marvel stuff I've been reading, mainly because it's like it has some of my favorite characters, America Chavez and Captain Marvel, and it's been like, if you like John Hickman's Avengers run, like it's very reminiscent of that. Like, they're dealing with these massive problems, and like right now they're like busting through different dimensions of the Marvel multiverse, like post Secret Wars, I'm still finishing it up, but like I really liked of everything I read this week. It's the last comic I read this week, but it's just like they directly reference like Secret Wars and like the outcome of that. So it's like I like that those Marvel books that are like, okay, here's this event that we had, here's the stuff that actually like is affected by it, and it's just a very good. If you liked the Marvel team books, I highly recommend you pick up Ultimates. I think you'll like it, like especially if you like the big problems that they have to solve.
Like bringing Galactus back to life.
Yeah, making him the life giver instead of the destroyer.
So yeah,
I think that's going to be everything for this this episode.
Join us next week when it's the fifth week of March and not that many comic books come out.
Is it the fifth week of March?
Yeah, it's the fifth Wednesday of March. So that means
we've had two of those this year, haven't we?
Yeah, so I've learned very slowly that the last week in the month is where kind of everything else gets shuffled into.
It just means I can catch up on stuff.
Join me next week when I talk about Omega Man. I can already tell you this is going to be the one book I talk about.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I can't remember everything on my pool, but I imagine that we might just have a discussion about Omega Man and why.
Darth Vader.
Also. Yeah, Darth Vader's out next week too. But yeah, join us next time. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Love you.